This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
You have three major candidates who are standing out. There's Tshisekedi and then Moise Katumbi and Martin Fayulu.
That's Abdul Shakur Aboud from VOA Swahili Service in Kinshasa, monitoring the upcoming elections in the DRC. Details coming up also. Egypt's President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi has won a third term in office. And at least 8 people were killed and 80 injured in an explosion at the main fuel depot in Guinea. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Nearly 40 million Congolese voters go to the polls for the next presidential election on Wednesday, with President Felix Tshisekedi seeking a second and final 5-year term in office. Moments ago, I talked to Abdul Shakur Aboud from VOA Swahili Service, who is in Kinshasa with the latest.
Well, there is a sort of concern what's going to happen on the 20th, because one major issue is that a lot of those materials, voting materials, have not reached some areas. So people are worried that people won't be able to be voting. And then you have the issue of voters' cards, identity cards. Most of them have been, they're old. They didn't get the new ones in time. So there will be a problem during the voting time to come in and try and see who is registered, who is not registered, who has a card, who doesn't have a card. So it looks like it's going to be chaos during the 20th of December. So those are the two main issues. There's even talks of that if they should postpone for some days. But we talked with the CENI, the Electoral Commission, and they said everything is ready. They're going to have elections as planned. So we're going to see the mood is that people are prepared for the election.
So, Shakur, who are the candidates that stand out right now?
The interesting part that this is general elections. When you talk of presidential elections, you have three major candidates who are standing out. There's Tshisekedi, and then Moise Katumbi, and Martin Fayulu, the two oppositions. Those are the ones who are standing out to look like they're going to have a strong competition.
How about Dr. Denis Mukwege, the Nobel Peace Prize winner?
Denis Mukwege just withdrew from his name from the election during the weekend. He said he's no longer participating because he feels the elections are not going to be fair and free. He feels it's going to be rigged. So he withdrew his name and decided not to support any person in the election.
The election takes place against the backdrop of conflict in the East.
Well, the conflict of the East is just continuing. Here in Kinshasa, you wouldn't feel anything. But what is well known, there are three provinces where elections won't be held, which was where they have a lot of fighting going along. But as a whole, I think it makes no difference to the whole country, because it's only to the East. This country is so big. In Kinshasa, you don't feel like the East is affecting the whole process.
And Shakur, whichever candidate gains the most votes in the first round becomes the next president, right? There are no runoffs in this election.
No, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, there are no runoffs. The one who wins, the one who gets the most votes, becomes president, yes.
That was Abdul Shakur Aboud from VOA Swahili Service. He talked to me from Kinshasa. Results in Egypt's presidential election have been announced, and as expected, the winner is Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. Securing a third term will now keep him in power till 2030. Many Egyptians expressed indifference about the election, saying the result was a foregone conclusion, but Egypt's state media says the vote was a step towards political pluralism. Reporter Angie Omar in Cairo is closely monitoring today's election result announcement, and she talked to me from Cairo.
The independent Egyptian president, Fattah el-Sisi, emerged victorious in the presidential election. Securing a new 6-year term was a significant mandate. The election authority announced that Sisi won with an overwhelming 89.6% of the vote. reflecting a strong level of support from the electorate. The voter turnout was deemed unprecedented at 66.8%, with over 39 million Egyptians casting their vote for the former army chief who has been at the helm of the country for the past decade.
Okay, so Angie, for Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, he will be securing a third term and will be in power till, I guess, 2030. Did he face any serious challenges during the campaign?
President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi faced several challenges, actually, in the presidential election. Number one is the economic crisis in Egypt. Sisi has presented himself as the person who will restore. But the economic crisis has undermined this narrative and left the country dependent on partner countries and international financial organizations. The second challenge is the skepticism and calls for cancellation, where some analysts and activists criticize the election, viewing it as a predetermined outcome that would guarantee Sisi's third term. Activists argued that the election was a waste of taxpayers' money, especially considering Egypt's severe economic crisis. And the third challenge is the conflict in the neighboring Gaza Strip, which diverted attention away from domestic issues and economic challenges. Many Egyptians were preoccupied with the developments in Gaza, leading to a lower focus on the election and its significance. And the fourth challenge is the perceived lack of genuine competition. While Sisi faced three viral candidates from various political parties, doubts actually arose about the election's credibility. And the last challenge is the internal divisions and limited support for opposition candidates. So these challenges indicate a complex political environment, including skepticism about the election's fairness, limited genuine competition, and concerns about restrictions on opposition candidates.
Some voters have said that the eruption of conflict in Gaza encouraged them to vote for Sisi, who has long presented himself as a bulwark of stability in a volatile region.
Well, the situation in Gaza and the Egyptian government's handling of the crisis were important issues for the Egyptian people. Some Egyptians questioned whether the government was doing enough to pump aid into Gaza, and called for an end to the Israeli-Egyptian blockade. However, Egypt's delicate relationship with Israel and its need for financial support limited its ability to take certain actions that might have alienated its Western backers or jeopardized its security partnership with Israel. The dire economic situation in Egypt, including high inflation and the falling currency value, was already a significant concern for many Egyptians before the conflict in Gaza.
That was reporter Angie Obar speaking with me from Cairo. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin arrived in Tel Aviv today and is expected to press Israel to wind down major combat operations in Gaza. Washington has been trying to leverage its support for the offensive to blunt its devastating impact on Palestinian civilians. France, Britain, and Germany, some of Israel's closest allies, have joined global calls for a ceasefire over the weekend. Also, Israeli protesters have demanded the government relaunch talks with Hamas on releasing more hostages after three were mistakenly killed by Israeli troops while waving a white flag. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said Israel will keep fighting until it removes Hamas from power and the group returns the dozens of hostages it still holds after its October 7th attack, which ignited the war. The 10-week-old war has killed over 18,700 Palestinians. Some 1.9 million Palestinians, nearly 85% of Gaza's population, have fled their homes, with most packing into UN-run shelters and tent camps in the southern part of the territory. Also today, a U.S. official said multiple missiles were fired at a tanker in the Red Sea of Yemen. A Houthi military spokesman confirmed the attack and said the group would continue targeting ships bound for Israeli ports as long as the blockade of Gaza continues. However, it's not clear the tanker was headed towards Israel. Oil and natural gas giant BP said today it was suspending shipments through the Red Sea, joining a growing list of companies halting operations in a major trade route. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyus Wuhib in Washington. In South Africa, former President Jacob Zuma on Saturday announced he won't campaign or vote for the ruling African National Congress, the ANC, in key elections expected to be held in May. Darren Taylor reports that Zuma's announcement has thrown the party that's governed for the past 30 years into turmoil.
Former President Jacob Zuma says he'll support a new political formation, Umkhonto weSizwe, or Spear of the Nation, in the run-up to the election. It's named after the ANC's military wing, which Zuma fought for against apartheid forces before South Africa became a multi-party, multiracial democracy under Nelson Mandela in 1994. Although Zuma says he'll remain an ANC member, he accuses the party of being a proxy for white capitalists and of corruption. However, in the courts, it's Zuma who stands accused of the worst excesses under ANC rule. A commission of inquiry in 2021 found he'd helped loot the state of hundreds of millions of dollars when he was president from 2008 until late 2017. He's also due to stand trial early next year for alleged financial crimes related to an arms deal in the 1990s. Zuma denies all the allegations and charges, saying they're part of a political witch hunt against him by his enemies within the ANC, including current President Cyril Ramaphosa. Wits University political analyst Susan Boysen tells VOA that Zuma's moves have the potential to hurt the ANC's election chances.
In this context, Jacob Zuma really played his cards strategically and played them well to embarrass the ANC and to force the ANC in a further weaker position, while he himself is probably delusional. The damage that he had done to the ANC, definitely not acknowledged in this process. But overall, a calculated, strategic, in some ways a mischievous move, but one that certainly cannot make the ANC feel comfortable, because the ANC is in this almost a life or death battle, electorally life or death battle.
Most pre-election surveys indicate the ANC will fall below the 50% of the vote it needs to hold on to outright power next year. This could force it into a coalition with an opposition party, or it'll lose governance completely. Many voters are unhappy with the ANC's handling of the struggling economy and the power sector. South Africa faces almost daily electrical outages and unemployment tops 30%. Zuma has a strong support base in KwaZulu-Natal, his home region. Boysen says many of Zuma's fellow Zulus vote for him because they believe he represents their interests. She says Zuma's tempting them to follow him away from the ANC.
It is a deliberate provocation of the ANC, really challenging his party to kick him out. Is this a party that really needs Jacob Zuma to campaign for it? We know some ANC leaders did approach him to ask whether he will campaign for the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal. Zuma remains incredibly valuable and popular, the type of cult following. He carries weight on the ground there. And KwaZulu-Natal is a very populous province in a system of proportional representation electorally, brings in a lot of votes that nationally contributes to the ANC's overall performance. So if he doesn't work for the ANC and actually actively works against the ANC in that province, there is going to be an impact on the percentage that the ANC registers in next year's election. And Zuma knows that, and he plays that.
Boysen and other analysts say Zuma's once again proving to be an enigma, telling the country he'll stay a loyal ANC member, while simultaneously attempting to destroy the party he says he still loves. ANC spokesperson Mahlengi Bengu Motsiri tells VOA the party is disappointed by Zuma's decision, but that it remains on track to win the election. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
At least 8 people were killed and 80 others injured when an explosion at the main fuel depot in Guinea, followed by a fire, rocked the center of the capital, Conakry, early today. Authorities closed schools and urged workers to stay at home as thick black clouds of smoke filled the sky and residents fled the area. Local media and residents contacted by the French news agency AFP say the incident happened around midnight local time at the state oil company's main depot in the Kaloum district near the port. The government also said service stations would remain closed and an investigation will be launched to establish the cause and those responsible. The Federal Republic of Somalia has signed the Treaty of Accession to the East African Community. South Sudan President Salva Kiir presided over the signing ceremony and says Somalia's entrance will boost regional and African trade by allowing free movement of goods, labor, and right of residence among East Africans. Reporter Mugume Davis Rowakaringi has more from Kampala, Uganda.
On behalf of the people of East Africa, I would like to warmly welcome Somalia into the East Africa community. Congratulations and thank you very much.
That was South Sudan's President Salva Kiir, the chairman of the East African community, speaking at the ceremony Friday when Somalia signed the accession treaty to join the EAC. At the gathering in Entebbe, Uganda, Kiir said Somalia will boost trade and security in the region.
Somalia, along with the rest of the member of East Africa community, will enjoy the 5 freedoms: free movement of goods, free movement of persons, free movement of labor, free movement of services, and free movement of capital, and 2 rights, namely the right of establishment and the right of residence, as enshrined in the protocol.
Somalia's President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud celebrated the signing and said in 2 quotes, "This is where we belong."
Somalia's integration will strengthen people-to-people connection, benefiting the East Africa in various aspects. As I said earlier, Somalis are already here in the East Africa community. We are part of the family, but today we have been a newly born for the purpose of legitimacy and legalization.
The requirements to join the EAC bloc include geographic proximity and interdependence. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni said it's natural that Somalia joins the bloc.
The word for water among the Somalis is B.O. Now, if you ask our Acholi speakers, those who speak Acholi, our Luo, the word for water in Luo is P.O. Exactly. Now, this is even nearer. So, these people, we are begging you to unite. These are people already united by God through history.
The East African community was established in 1967 by Uganda, Kenya, and Tanzania. The other members are Rwanda, Burundi, Democratic Republic of Congo, and now Somalia. With a population of more than 300 million people, the bloc boasts of a combined gross domestic product of $313 billion. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
As Senegal gears up for elections in February, some reports are turning away from coverage, citing attacks and threats. In a bright spot, some journalists and police are training together to find a better way forward. For VOA, Senanu Tord reports from Dakar, Senegal.
At the Maison de la Presse in Dakar, Senegal, journalists share their experiences of harassment by police and politicians with media stakeholders and security experts. They say violations in the past 2 years are responsible for Senegal's ranking on the Press Freedom Index, dropping from 49 to 104th of 180 countries. Coverage of protests over the arrest of an opposition leader in 2021 marks the beginning of the decline, says Mamadou Tio, chair of Senegal's Council for the Observation of the Rules of Ethics and Professional Conduct in the Media, or CORED. Media covering those clashes, in which about a dozen civilians were killed, soon found themselves targeted. Mamadou Tio.
The journalists wanted to show what was happening really, and this, police and gendarmerie forces didn't want the press to show that. And that's why, you know, sometimes there was a dagger's drawn. The gentleman agreement existing between us, let's say, before March 21, you know, this gentleman agreement, you know, didn't operate it after those events.
Since that date, media watchdogs have documented upward of 20 assaults on journalists. Amadou Sababa is part of Senegal's Young Reporters Convention. He says one of the attacks happened recently and he found it very ridiculous. He says during a protest, a former governor of Dakar gave blatant instructions to defense and security forces to tear gas and attack the press. VOA's attempt to reach Governor Alioune Badara San about the incident were unsuccessful. A spokesperson for Senegal's government did not respond to VOA's request for comment about the incident and the country's decline in press freedom. In a bid to repair the relationship, police and press are training together. In a training session hosted by RSF, journalists called for increased protection and reform to several provisions in Senegal's press code. Sadi Boumarong is the Sub-Saharan Director for RSF.
We are calling on the authorities, first of all, to stop, to put an end to the never-ending arrests of journalists we have seen in the last 2 years, and also to repeal the problematic provisions in the press codes, because in many countries in West Africa, I mean, the press codes are done in a way that if a journalist is arrested, he can't be sent to jail directly. But in Senegal, that's not the case.
As Senegal's February presidential election approach, Reporters Without Borders, or RSF, has observed an increase in harassment. The media watchdog has noted a rise in intermittent internet cuts and social media blackouts as well. Sababa says these are attempts to silence the media. He says he doesn't think Senegal, which claims to be a democratic and hospitable country, should be called a democracy if these kinds of practices continue, if journalists can no longer do their jobs properly. While CORED says many journalists are wary of political coverage ahead of the February vote, RSF says it will be there to help train and equip reporters to do their work safely. Senanu Tord, VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
Kenya and the European Union today signed a long-negotiated trade agreement to increase the flow of goods between the two markets. This comes as Brussels pursues stronger economic ties with Africa. The economic partnership agreement will give Kenya duty-free and quota-free access to the EU, its biggest export market, while European goods will receive progressive tariff reductions. The French news agency AFP says the agreement is the first broad trade deal between the EU and an African nation since 2016 and follows a spending spree by China on lavish infrastructure projects across the continent. Kenyan President William Ruto said the deal would put real money into the pockets of ordinary people. The EU said in a statement that it includes commitments to sustainable development in areas such as labor rights and environmental protection. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.